This is the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. This is episode 280. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the NFL wire site from the USA Today family of sites. My co-host is Seth Cox from AvengerTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. And unfortunately, we are not here to talk about on a Tuesday night. We're not here to talk about a 3-0 Cardinals team. They had a hiccup. They lose to the Detroit Lions 26-23 on a last-second field goal in a game that never felt completely right, Seth. What can you say? It was a game that you knew was coming, and it just came now. They could not keep that momentum rolling.
Yeah, and that's just the reality of the NFL is winning games consistently is hard. And I mean, you look at it, and I know it's two completely different scenarios, and so this isn't going to be, you know, and no Cardinals fans are going to take too much solace in this, but the reality of the situation becomes, would you rather have a performance where you perform bad and you have a chance at the end, or would you rather look like the Baltimore Ravens on Monday Night Football where you don't even look like you belong on the same football field as the Kansas City Chiefs. So that, I mean, that happens. And, you know, for the Arizona Cardinals, they had a bit of a clunker, but as you and I talked about off the air, it was not as bad as their normal clunkers, which is, I guess, progress. It's still a loss, and, you know, we don't take any solace in losses at this point, but we've seen worse, and I think that's one bad, but two kind of sad, and but three also gives us a little hope moving forward.
Absolutely. In this edition of the show, we're going to react to the loss. We're going to go over what went wrong, talk about some of the things, you know, we'll also go into things because not everything was bad, but we're going to talk about in particular the play of the receivers, maybe some concerns there might be about Kyler Murray. We're going to talk about the injuries that have come out, and then we'll look ahead to what they've got in week four on the road again for now starting for 3 weeks against the Carolina Panthers as they try to regroup. So let's start off with this loss. It was, from my perspective, after the way they lost it at the end, it was very disappointing. And it felt like a worse loss than it actually was. There were plenty of things to go wrong, but there was still a lot to really be okay with. And for me, Kyler Murray had a bad game, but it wasn't a terrible game because he had 270 yards passing. He has the two touchdowns. He throws Andy Isabella. He runs for the other touchdown. But those three interceptions are just there glaring at you as the mistakes. But take away, like, obviously the interceptions you factor into. And I think ultimately that was really the only difference in the game is the fact that the turnovers mattered. And they couldn't overcome that. Offensively, they didn't get all the way in rhythm, but they didn't play poorly offensively. They just turned the ball over. And so what went wrong? Well, for me, it just comes down to this. They turned the ball over too many times and didn't do anything to get the ball back.
Yeah, I mean, as much as we've complimented the progress of the defense this year, I think the one negative for the defense has been the lack of turnovers they forced. It's just not something that they're not winning the turnover battle each game. You hit the nail on the head. Some of that is Kyler Murphy or Murray and his play, but it also is the defense needs to make plays. They've had two interceptions by Chris Banjo negated pass interference penalties, and you know, it's one of those situations where good defenses don't just prevent yards or points or things of that nature. They create opportunities for the offense as well. And so that's, you know, that's kind of the next step in this evolution that we've talked about of the Arizona Cardinals as a team and their defense.
And you look at it over in particular, they're not good at making plays on the ball in the passing game. They have over the last couple of years forced turnovers with strip sacks and the like. However, 7 interceptions all of last year, and it took nearly half a season to get any interceptions at all. And no, the 2 picks that are negated. But the Cardinals, let's just face it, they do not get their hands on a lot of passes. They have very few pass breakups as a team. And that's one of the things. I don't know if it's something about their personnel or the scheme. Now, in fairness, Budda Baker has never, like, that coming out of college, the knock on him was his lack of interceptions. Teams don't throw at Patrick Peterson, which takes away the opportunity for any interceptions there. Byron Murphy, they call him a ball hawk, but he didn't come out of college with gobs of interceptions either. And so you've got Hicks, who can catch the ball. We haven't seen much from Devondre Campbell. And where teams are attacking them in the passing game, there's frankly hasn't been many opportunities to do that because they're not getting the ball tipped. And the routes that they're being thrown at them are not ones where they're going to throw them contested and be able to make an interception. And so, you know, if the offense isn't perfect, the defense, if they're not taking the ball away, it's just going to... I will say this. The defense played well enough to win. I will give the credit to that. The defense, I will stress this again, as bad as they looked at certain stretches, they did enough to win. They held Detroit to, what was it, 322 yards of total offense. They sacked Matthew Stafford 4 times. They were 2 of 6 in the red zone. They held him to 4 of 12 on third down. Those are all very, very good metrics. They just couldn't overcome the turnovers on offense. And with the lack of taking the ball away, you have to look at that off defensive performance and say that you can't expect much more from a defensive unit than that, other than creating some takeaways.
Yeah, and that's the thing that you really need, like I said, to become a complete team and a team that's competing. I mean, we haven't seen this offense really click on all cylinders yet, and so this team is still a team that's in need of balance in order to be successful. That means that they need, you know, they need their defense to do more than just be good enough. And you look at it kind of down the line, offensively, the Lions and Cardinals were very even outside of the turnovers. And again, I don't think Detroit did anything too special. They ran a lot of zone coverages. And I think that picked on Kyler a little bit, and you know, the first one we can say wasn't his fault. The other two were, you know, one was I don't think he saw Jamie Collins. The other one was he just tried to force a throw that he shouldn't have tried to force to DeAndre Hopkins, running one way and throwing it across his body.
And so, he just made a bad throw. He just put the ball in the wrong place. If he throws it if he throws it ahead of Hop, that's a catch. But yeah, Okuda made a great play on that ball. Then he should have had another interception as well that didn't happen. So he was fortunate in that. Another thing that, you know, the offense had never those penalties, and it wasn't because they had the same amount of penalties as the Lions did, and with 7 penalties, they didn't have a ton of penalty yards. But the timing of their penalties were critically bad. For example, they have the 4th-and-1 where they bring Chris Streveler onto the field, which presumably is going to be a QB sneak. That's what I figured would have happened. 4th-and-1, Dan Arnold get called for the false start. They have a chance to extend the drive. Because pretty much, aside, like, the problems that they had on offense seemed to be all self-inflicted, whether it was the turnovers, penalties, or Cliff Kingsbury suddenly trying to get too cute on a sequence, in my opinion. Because as we saw for most of the game, they had no problems moving down the field. And it was just a matter of they would turn the ball over or something stupid would happen, like the penalty there, or, you know, on defense, they have the interception negated. They were fortunate on that last drive where Matthew Stafford completes that super deep pass and they gets negated for a holding call. And so they got 2nd and 25 or whatever, 2nd and 15, and then there's an overthrow of TJ Hawkinson. No way he's going to catch it. Byron Murphy. So it's going to be 3rd and 15. Cardinals look like they're going to be in a position. And then Byron Murphy gets called for pass interference. He did have his hands on Hawkinson. It was completely unnecessary, and Hawkinson sold it too. But guess what? If Byron Murphy just defends okay, that pass wasn't going to be completed anywhere. You get a third down. Instead, it extends the drive. There's just 3 or 4 penalties that stopped and changed momentum overall. And that's really, really bad, is the fact that they've just been, their penalties not only have been happening more than you'd like, they're happening at very poor moments.
Yeah, they're happening at, you know, inconvenient and inopportune times. And it's creating, like you said, it's just creating this constant stream of inability to get off the field. And that last drive was kind of the main thing. Like, they were worn down. They were a little bit lazy. The communication wasn't great with their 4th and 5th safety on the field. And so, yeah, I mean, the guy they just picked up off a practice squad on Tuesday or Wednesday this week, or last week.
Curtis Riley, addition. He ends up being, he's involved in what ends up being kind of the kicker of the play that puts them into field goal range when he misses a tackle of Marvin Jones, and he puts them into solid field goal range instead of forcing Matt Prater have to come and hit like a 55-yarder. You feel much better. Like, maybe the Lions still win the game, but on a 55-yarder, there's definitely no guarantees, and you're looking at potential overtime. But then when you come out, and he's got a 39-yard field goal from the spot that he likes, it's almost a given that you're going home a loser in that sense.
Yeah, so I mean, that's just a bad, you know, a bad way to finish you know, a little 2-game homestand and kick off a 3-game road trip, which is, you know, probably less daunting than we expected when the season started, but it's still a 3-game road trip, and it's going to be a lot of travel. It's going to be a lot of back and forth, and so it's, you would have liked to have come away with a win and go 3-0 and kind of set yourself up for that next, you know, 3-game run. But in the end, it's just, you had too many mistakes on both sides of the ball. I mean, you and I talked about it off the air. It's something that's unsung about what the Cardinals did in their first 2 games was just how well they played on special teams. And they gave up some return yardage on special teams in this game. And you know, Chris Banjo being hurt, I think that kind of reared its ugly head as well. So, you know, and Andy Isabella wasn't on as many teams. I think he only had 2 or 3 special team snaps this week. So you were getting some more work on special teams from guys that don't usually play it. And those key special teams guys having to be elevated to starting roles or you know, or getting more snaps, something that we want with Isabella, but, you know, that they're asking out of Chris Banjo, I think, showed up in the performance on the special team side. So, you know, it's not shocking that the worst performance of the season on offense, defense, and special teams led to a loss.
Right. Coming up next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on and talk about, in particular, the play of their receivers. There were some good, and there was definitely some bad. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. The Cardinals played... They were without Christian Kirk, and it looks like he will be... Well, we don't know. The first injury report of the week doesn't come out till Wednesday afternoon. But it feels like, at least to me, we might be missing Christian Kirk for probably at least another week. And so that meant more playing time for Andy Isabella and Keyshawn Johnson. What we saw was some hope and something, you know, the Cardinals fans have been waiting for the last year plus what it would look like for Andy Isabella to get a more of an opportunity offense, and it paid off. At the same time, getting more Keyshawn Johnson was not all that satisfying to fans. There was great production from DeAndre Hopkins, and that was a scary little bit when it came to Larry Fitzgerald. He got his catch early, but he finished with as many receiving yards as you and I had. One catch for 0 yards. What is your thought overall from the production from the receivers in that standpoint?
You know, I think it's good and bad. I think one, it's good that you continue to see DeAndre Hopkins and Kyler Murray's, you know, growth. Hopkins has 32 catches through 3 games. I mean, his on pace is just ridiculous this year outside of the touchdowns. And you know, that's something that you can hang your hat on, is that they've developed an instant connection. I think from there, it's been interesting. We've seen, you know, obviously it's just one game, but we've seen growth from Andy Isabella. We've seen maybe the beginning of the end of a legend in Larry Fitzgerald. And then we haven't seen anybody else step up. Obviously Christian Kirk is hurt, but he had his best game against Washington, 2 catches, so, you know, one big play, but he hasn't been consistent. And then Keyshawn Johnson got a chance this week and had a huge drop on the first series that, you know, I don't want to say led to Kyler Murray's interception, because that was just a dumb decision by Kyler, but it did lead to Kyler having to make a throw that was a dumb decision. And if Keyshawn drops that or catches that pass along the sideline, the Cardinals are in, you know, in business in first down and in the red zone. And instead, you know, Kyler forces a pass and gets picked off. And then on that one of their late drives, it was a tough pass. Kyler threw it a little early, but in the end, you know, that's a pass you'd expect a guy in single coverage to catch, and Keyshawn was unable to get it. I don't think it went down as a drop technically, but I don't want to beat a dead horse, but we've seen, you know, obviously Larry Fitzgerald and DeAndre Hopkins this year make that catch. And so if you want to be the guy opposite DeAndre Hopkins, if you want to be the guy that's taking targets away from Larry Fitzgerald, I really think you need to prove that and make those type of plays. And so it was just, you know, it was interesting because as we see kind of Andy Isabella's maybe first kind of steps towards ascension, he still played 20 less snaps than Keyshawn Johnson right in the game.
And I anticipated that was going to happen by simply with the nature of the position that Kirk plays. Now, Kirk plays more outside, and they've been playing Andy inside. And so it always felt like Keyshawn was going to get more snaps to begin with. Now, just the puzzling thing is the fact that, and my main criticism of Keyshawn is this. If he's because he's not a burner, so if you're going to be known as a great route runner with good hands, then you definitely need to catch the ball. Now, there were two plays. Like, he's targeted 7 times. Larry Fitzgerald's targeted 3 times. And so I know how that ends up going, but the fact that it felt like Kyler was trying to get, or whether it was Cliff's plan or Kyler, you know, his comfort level with Keyshawn, he was just trying to get him going. It seems like they're trying to count on Keyshawn in critical moments when you have much better options and you've got things going well. Case in point, you've got that deep throw at the end of the game. I don't know what Kyler was looking at. You're throwing it to Keyshawn Johnson, who is not a great separator, but you've got a less deep, but still deep pass to an Andy Isabel, who's completely wide open. I don't understand that. It's like, my son has a theory on this, and Cliff kind of alluded to it as well, that Kyler and Keyshawn have a great relationship, and so I think that leads to Kyler trusting Keyshawn more than I think we, the fans and analysts, would think he should. And that trust is leading him, and maybe he's just not buddy-buddy with Andy, and so he hasn't, and we saw it last year, there were a number of times when Andy Isabella was open and he didn't look his direction.
Yeah, and so it just feels like he hasn't quite gotten there yet. So it'll take some time, man. I mean, it's just going to take some time, and you got to hope that they continue to grow and they become and develop that same type of togetherness that you're seeing from DeAndre and Kyler already.
Oh, and by all means, let's just keep getting the ball to DeAndre Hopkins because he's doing great things. If there's anything, like, he is proving that, everyone knew that it was a great trade to begin with. Some people questioned the amount of money he was given in his extension, but for a guy that you can count on short, intermediate, down the field to make people miss and get more yards, he has been everything. Absolutely everything we could have imagined him to be in terms of the passing game. And it didn't seem like the Lions really had any answer for him. And were it not for a misplaced ball in his direction, you know, we'd be looking at a much different result. And yeah, the Christian Kirk's absence is going to be felt. Now, I have a feeling this week Larry Fitzgerald is going to be a much more active part of the game plan. He doesn't complain about that sort of anything anymore, but any game plan that involves him only being targeted three times and his only catches goes for his New Year's, that's not logical. That's not good game planning. It's not good decision making unless you're getting massive production from other sources, and they didn't get that. They got it from Hopkins, but it'd be a different story if Keyshawn is targeted seven times, but he ends up with five catches for 80 yards. Then you're like, okay, that makes sense. Keyshawn was the hot hand. You can't ignore Larry Fitzgerald because he, as Cliff said after the game, is the heart and soul of it all. He's kind of the heartbeat. You get him involved, good things happen.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is you've got talent on this team, and you know, sometimes I think because you have guys at the top with DeAndre, and you lose track of other guys, but at the same time you do have unique talent, especially with the addition of Kenyon Drake. You have a Dan Arnold, you have an Andy Isabella who's starting to come into his own, and it's just, you know, when you have that much talent, you need to continue to foster it and grow it. And so, but there are guys that just, like you said, they are the guys in situations that probably need to have the ball in their hands a little more. And that's, you know, at the end of the day, it's going to fall on Kyler to make those decisions the right way and make sure that he's going in that direction.
Coming next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk a little bit more about Kyler Murray. That's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Kyler Murray had arguably his worst performance as a pro. It was his first three interception game of the year. He didn't have the impact with his legs other than the highlight reel touchdown from a yard out when he completely embarrassed Jeff Okuda. Some might say that what the Lions did figured out Kyler. Would you say that blueprint is one that teams will be able to replicate and have the same sort of success?
You know, it's just, it's one of those situations, I think, that sometimes teams do a good job of game planning. And I mean, at the end of the day, Kyler had nearly 300 yards of total offense. He had three total touchdowns. It's just when you have three interceptions, it creates problems. And, you know, we talked a little bit about different quarterbacks and young quarterbacks last week. And I know that it's, you know, you don't want to compare to a Pro Bowler or an All-Pro and MVP and Lamar Jackson or, but when you look at players in general, they have bad games. And when you look at a guy like, you know, Lamar Jackson, he had a game against Pittsburgh last year where he threw three interceptions. They won 26-23. I mean, that's the difference. You know, you look at how he played this week, he only had 97 yards passing, and, you know, they get run off the field. So I think when you look at it from that perspective, finding a guy out or figuring a guy out is really just, I think it's easier to say that than it is to prove it. Now, if over the next six games the Cardinals go 0-6 and Kyler, you know, has 15 interceptions, okay, maybe then he's starting to get figured out, or he is figured out. But I think one game, you know, everybody has bad games. I mean, you look at Tom Brady I'm not trying to compare Kyler to Tom Brady, but I mean, Tom Brady in his season debut with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers lost to what's starting to look like a, you know, an interesting and maybe not as good as we all expected New Orleans Saints team. And he had two interceptions. And Tom Brady's seen basically every defense that's been played in the NFL for the last 20 years. So, I mean, guys have bad games, guys struggle. And like I said, if his bad game is almost 300 yards of total offense, I'm going to take that, because I assume that he's not going to throw three interceptions every game. I think those will get cleaned up. Again, if he continues to throw multiple interceptions a game over the course of a season, then you get worried. But one game, when he kept his team in the game and gave them a chance at the end, I mean, you know, you take the good with the bad.
Right. And here's the thing. The Lions did in one way limit the impact that Kyler had with his legs. That's going to happen sometimes, and he's not. We were spoiled by his running production the first 3 weeks. What he did in the running game was really typical of what he did last year. He had more passing. But yeah, you take away those interceptions, you've got a 300-yard game, multiple touchdowns, and you're saying it's great. That's the problem. The interceptions is solely the problem. And now, granted, over the course of his young career, he's been pretty good at taking care of the ball. I do find a little concern over the last few games of last season, the beginning of this season, he is much more prone to turning the ball over than he was early in the season. And, you know, kind of what we saw a lot of rookie quarterbacks and second-year quarterbacks, they have their problems early and kind of rectify it. He was good about taking care of the football before, in part because he was holding on the ball too long and taking sacks. Now he's testing the waters a little bit more. I anticipate a bounce back performance. If there's anything we've seen about Kyler Murray, he's going to fix things because he wants to be great, and we think he's going to be great. And I think everyone around the league believes he is a star in the making of the Patrick Mahomes, Russell Wilson sort of mold, that he's going to be that good. And so, you know, goodness, how many times do we see Carson Palmer throw three interceptions a game? We saw him turn over the ball six times against the Panthers in the playoffs. Kurt Warner threw multiple interceptions in games. It happens. It happens to the greatest quarterbacks. You know, Brett Favre, he leads the NFL, he leads the NFL in history and in interceptions. And so interceptions happen. You don't want it to happen. And it's when you're not used to him turning the ball over, it's not, he's not Jameis Winston. It's going to get corrected. Overall, I did like it. It just felt like he was a little bit, like, as as productive as he was in the passing game, it just felt like he wasn't quite in rhythm. But I think that kind of goes across the board with the offense. This is an offense that you feel like it's just so close to exploding. It just didn't quite do it. For whatever reason, it was turnovers, mistakes, cutesy play calling, you know. But yeah, and so I'm not overly concerned. But then again, I'm the eternal optimist. And I think he's going to be a star anyway. I anticipate the production is coming and the big passing games are about to happen.
Yeah, and I think that as they continue to kind of get more and more comfortable with one another, I think we're seeing what it looks like when a team doesn't have an off season and doesn't really get a chance to implement these new pieces. You know, Christian Kirk's health has been is starting to become a concern. You know, and you're implementing Dan Arnold. Keyshawn Johnson was out, and you know, you talked about his relationship and Kyler's comfort with him. And so, when you're continually trying to cycle in receivers and work through things, it's just, you know, sometimes it just doesn't work out like you'd want it to. And so, I think we're close to an explosive game. I was expecting more of it this week than I got, but, you know, I don't think it's anything to be worried about.
Coming on next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to move on and talk about the injuries. The Cardinals have been hit hard, but not long-term hard like some other teams. But nonetheless, there are concerns. Talking injuries, that's coming on next on Rise Up Sea Red. Back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. The Cardinals continue to have to deal with short-term injuries. I mean, Robert Alford done for the year, but they are, like the rest of the league, dealing with a number of players with injuries. So, Jalen Thompson with the ankle injury. You've got Max Williams with an ankle injury. You've got Buda Baker now with the thumb. He's going to have surgically repaired. Chris Banjo with the hamstring now, Christian Kirk with the groin. That is a number of starters or rotational players who now are dealing with injuries, short-term injuries nonetheless, but it is definitely testing the Cardinals' depth. They got, at receiver at least, you got good production from Andy Isabella, not so great production from Keyshawn Johnson. At tight end, you do notice Max Williams' absence. The production in the running game has been okay, but not great. Darrell Daniels is doing pretty all right, but he's definitely not Max Williams. Doesn't have the same energy, doesn't have the same blocking ability. And then, more than anything, you're noticing the depth of safety is becoming an issue. You're down. You know for sure the Cardinals are not going to have Buda and Jalen Thompson this week. Maybe not Chris Banjo. And so then you're left with a combination of Deontay Thompson and Curtis Riley. That's a little bit concerning entering week four.
Yeah, and it's, you know, we talked a little bit about the oddity of the roster construction this year and the fact that we expected to see a little more from, or you know, that they didn't have multiple safeties on the roster. It's not uncommon, but you know, the fact that they really only had three on the active roster come game day was what I thought you and I were slightly confused about. Obviously, and they love Chris.
We want to make sure that Chris Charles Washington, technically a safety, aside from two snaps in week one on defense, he hasn't played a defensive snap in about 3 years.
Yeah, and so, you know, Charles Washington is basically a special teams player, which is fine. I mean, he's a key special teams player. He's very good. You know, so it's just a bit odd that they would go that route and not, I mean, they had no veteran depth. I mean, I guess Chris Banjo is technically the veteran depth on the team, but you know, it was an interesting way to construct it, and I think it did come back to bite them a little bit, especially in this game. I mean, you never can predict three guys to go down or two guys to go down and one guy to be, you know, basically one-handed, but it was a risk, and sometimes you take risk and get burned. And I think, you know, in one game so far, it burned them, and let's hope it's not something that burns them for a consecutive weeks or for multiple weeks while, you know, they wait on Jalen Thompson, who I believe can come off the IR next week after this game.
That is correct. He will have to miss the Carolina game, and assuming he is healthy, how ideally he'll be back for the Jets game, which means they'll have to weather this weekend with some uncertainty at safety. It's really unfortunate because I think you never really count on having two starting safeties out, and then not just two starting safeties, but then your main backup safety. And part of the problem was, ultimately, is that last week you ended up having Deontay Thompson playing, and Deontay Thompson was playing a position he doesn't practice at. I'm sure he gets a little bit of work there, but he plays Buddha's position. He's Buddha's backup, and Chris Banjo can kind of play both positions. And so Buddha was having to play. Buddha was playing his position. Deontay's got to play Jalen's position, which isn't necessarily should be his strength, but he hasn't been practicing there. It'll be interesting to see him play, get that start. He was a guy that they like the talent that he has, and Seth is high on in terms of his ability, as long as he can stay healthy. Because he does add some physicality and some of that deep safety talent, like the true deep safety that they hadn't had on the roster in a while. That said, you're going to be, even though Carolina is not a good team, you're going to worry about what happens on the back end. Because here's the one thing that Vance Joseph said about Jalen Thompson. When he was out there, some of those big plays stopped happening. He's a great tackler in the open field. And when there's breakdowns in front of him, he didn't necessarily stop the big plays from happening. He just made them less big plays. That might be a problem. You might get a couple more big plays down the field, or maybe an extra touchdown down the field that happens as a result of having a backup back there. So that's going to be interesting to see. I don't want to worry about Christian Kirk, but dude, that guy can't stay healthy. And this year, it is the soft tissue thing. I'm really high on Christian Kirk. I think he has great potential. I don't think he's, you know, a number, like a big time receiver, but I think he's a big time producer. I think if he can get things straight, he's a volume catcher. He can make things happen. It just that the injuries are always so badly timed.
Yeah, and I mean, there's never a good time for injuries, obviously, but as you stated, like, it was, they all seemed to come at once at the same position, which made it more difficult. And now you've got Christian Kirk, who's never been able to stay healthy for a full, you know, 16-game season, and that's, you know, that's worrisome in and of itself. And I think a lot of it comes down to, you know, as Cardinals fans, we've been spoiled, especially with Larry Fitzgerald and now, you know, DeAndre Hopkins and their abilities to really kind of play through nagging injuries and stay healthy. So, you know, we'll see as it moves forward what happens and how that works out. But thus far, I mean, I think you've seen that this team is just – it's not – we talked about that, I think, in our previous show, is that this team is good and I would say average to good in terms of talent with their top 25. But once you're past that, and that's obviously not including, you know, Zane Gonzalez, Andy Lee, and Aaron Brewer. But when you're talking about their top 25 guys that are going to get a lot of snaps, I think they're good. But after that, there starts to be a drop off, and that's just life in the NFL, man. Like, when you're down to third and fourth string players at positions, that's what happens. So,
what do you think about the possibility of Isaiah Simmons getting time at safety? I'm excited about the potential of him getting out there and playing more. I am a little bit worried about the long-term effects, like we've seen from Hassan Reddick, who got drafted as an edge guy. They play him inside immediately, then they move him to the edge because of injury, then they move him, then he has to move to off the ball in a 4-3. Then he goes back to a 3-4 off the ball, and he never does it well. And it looks like finally in year four, he's turning into a solid contributor. As much as I want to see Simmons succeed, I don't want him having to play safety now inhibit his development and ultimately what they feel he's going to be as a player in the NFL.
Yeah, and that's a lot of it. I think moving him away from the line, it's one of those instances where it would actually work better for him. I just think he's so athletic that you get him away from the line, away from the junk, and you let him run and chase and make plays, and that's where he's going to be the most successful. So I'm all for it if he's playing kind of that Buda Baker role. That's the problem, though, is that's, as you said, where Deontay Thompson's been playing. So is that really the best thing for him?
I don't know. At the same time, you give Deontay Jalen's spot, which he did play last year. If you give him a week of practice there, you don't force him out of position for a week, and we'll kind of see. The fact that they're having those conversations and the team is sort of pushing that article out there suggests that it's happening. And I wonder if this week he ends up actually in the starting line. I mean, he's been in the starting lineup all 3 weeks. They've been scheming that way so that he comes in, he's playing an extra linebacker all 3 weeks. So he's gotten three starts. I wonder if he's going to get significant playing time this week at safety. I think it'll be interesting to see, the least, especially when, you know you're down three. They brought in Jalen TJ Ward, but can you count on him to start necessarily? He hasn't played since 2017. It's kind of lining up to give Simmons that opportunity. And you know, while you hope he has a big game, you're like, wait, but then what? If he has a big game at safety, then you're like, oh, but now what? Do you keep playing him at safety?
Well, and I think it's one of those positions where you can, I mean, the Cardinals played a ton of three safeties in when they had Tony Jefferson and Buda, or Tony Jefferson and Ty Matthew and who was it? Was it Swearinger that year? It was Rashad, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it's still Rashad. That it was still Rashad, yeah. Then.
And so, I mean, that's the thing, is I think you can still do that, you know, with these guys. And you have when you get Jalen back, if Isaiah shows that he can play in that way, when you get Jalen back, you have, you know, him in the Rashad role. You use Isaiah more in the Tony Jefferson role, and then use Buda in the Matthew role, or you flop those and maybe you use Simmons a little more as a Tyrann Mathieu type, kind of all over the field. But I think it would be a better problem to have if you have more places and opportunity to play him than saying, well, we're not going to take Devondre Campbell and Jordan Hicks off the field, so we just got to find ways to get you on the field more.
Coming on, it's on the Rise Up Secret Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now let's look ahead to Carolina. What is there to expect from a Carolina team that is beatable, but it's a team that's kind of had the Cardinals number for the last few years? That's coming next on Rise Up Secret. We're back on the Rise Up Secret Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. The Carolina Panthers. They don't look like a good team, but that doesn't mean they're not dangerous, as they put up over 30 points in their season opener. They are missing Christian McCaffrey. What can we look forward to in this Panthers team?
You know, they're a really, thus far, really bad defensive team that's got some okay pieces on offense. You know, it's really going to come down to what they look like, you know, what they bring in terms of offense, and can they get out in front of the Cardinals and make the Cardinals have to play from behind. If the Cardinals are able to play from in front, like the Bucks and the Raiders were the first 2 weeks, it's going to be really tough for the Panthers to win. But as you kind of break down this team, they're really, really bad against the run. I mean, like, really, really bad. They're bad against the pass, but I mean, they're one of the worst run defenses in the NFL. And so I think this could be the week that you see Kyler and Kenyon Drake kind of take off and go over 100 yards rushing. And all of a sudden, you kind of get back on track in terms of the run game. And then that's when Kyler's at his best, is when there's when the Cardinals are able to play what we call 11-on-11 football, and they're able to do different things and create opportunities in the receiving game, off moving Kyler around, off play action, and things of that nature.
They are giving up 57% of their third downs this year defensively, the Panthers. They've allowed 10 touchdowns in 3 games. They are giving up nearly 5 yards a carry in the running game. Those are things. They're giving up nearly 400 yards of offense a game, but the offense has been pretty, pretty good. Now, third down effectiveness, they're 44% on third down. They're averaging 370 yards a game. They are averaging just under 4 yards a carry. However, they have not been particularly good in the red zone. They are 5 of 13. They're 38% in the red zone. Teddy Bridgewater's only got 2 touchdown passes to 2 interceptions. They've only scored 6 total touchdowns in those 3 games so far. And they've lost the guy that scored 4 of those touchdowns in Christian McCaffrey. So that's kind of the thing. They throw the ball a lot to Robbie Anderson, and that's kind of it. Mike Davis will be important to them in the running game and the passing game. He's number 2. He's number 2 on the team in receptions with 16 in 3 games, and he's their second leading rusher on the team. But it's really kind of not pretty, because out of the 297 yards of rushing that they've got, 156 of those are from Christian McCaffrey, who's not playing.
Yeah, and so that's what it'll come down to, is just the continued kind of improvement that the Panthers are showing. I mean, they've gotten better, you know, week to week, but it's going to be, I mean, we said this a couple times, but it seems like it's going to be a shootout in this game. You know, they only gave up 16 points, but the Chargers offense is really, really bad right now. But, you know, in the first 2 games, they give up 65 points between the Raiders and the Bucks. I think the Cardinals have a really good opportunity to go on the road and, you know, win their second road game of the season and get to 2-0 on the road and start off this 3-game road trip, you know, on the right foot. But they've got to come, you know, they've got to come with the right mentality. You know, first off, the Panthers have 2 sacks in 3 games. They don't generate any type of pass rush. As you said, their run defense is putrid. Number 7 overall pick, Derek Brown, has really not done much thus far in the season. He's been a bit of a, you know, like Isaiah Simmons, a bit of a disappointment, but I mean, he's on the field a lot more than Isaiah has been. So that's, you know, that happens a lot. You know, I think in the end, if the Cardinals can find a way to contain Robbie Anderson, they should be able to win this game. But as we said with Kenny Golladay last week, that's really the X factor. Golladay's return to the Lions offense, you know, was enough to put them over the top in that game. And if the Cardinals can't control and contain Robbie Anderson, who's a very good receiver. I mean, you and I were – that was one of the guys we talked about the Cardinals picking up this offseason and maybe bringing in as a really good fit to this offense. I just – you know, maybe
but he
they're
is
not
really their only real threat weapon, in the passing game. I mean, as a among the receivers, everything else they do is to their backs, pretty
right.
much.
Right, and like you said, All-Pro Christian McCaffrey's out still, so it's, you know, it's one of those situations where you look at it and you really expect the Cardinals to. Because we're saying this is a good team now. I think that's where we're at, is that, hey, this is a good team that had a bad game, was still in it, and could have won. And now you look at it, they're going on a road against a bad team that's got a really bad defense, and we expect this team to go out and win. And so I think with our mentality still in that function and in that ideal – that is going to shape what our expectations are. Now, if the Cardinals go out and lose on the road, even though it is on the road and it is an early, you know, East Coast game, I think your expectations change and what you expect from this team moving forward changes.
That's absolutely the truth. Now, if it's going to come down to this, the Cardinals should have they should be efficient on offense. They can't afford the turnovers. Carolina's offense has been very good. This is definitely by far the best offense that the Cardinals have seen yet. Now, granted, they're without Christian McCaffrey, so that's a completely different story now, so it's a completely different dynamic. However, they have been productive, and so if the Cardinals don't take care of the football, they're going to put their defense in a bad position because the Cardinals' defense is strong enough to be play well early, but it is sort of built to play from ahead. And so the pass rushing, the sack, you know, they haven't, you know, Chandler Jones hasn't gotten the sack production. They've gotten the sacks elsewhere, and so that's good. But this defense is really more set up to play from ahead, and you can't count on them overall to lock teams down if you keep giving them possessions. And you give them extra possessions more than anything else.
Right, and that's what we've seen the first 2 weeks. And obviously it's a very small sample size, but if the Cardinals can win the possession battle, you know, and give their defense an opportunity to kind of work from ahead, as you said, they seem to be like a team that plays well and has a chance to win a lot of games. The reality is the first time they didn't do that, they lost to a team that we expected them to beat. So we'll see how that turns out in you know, week four and their second road game.
Who do you think gives them the most trouble offensively for the Panthers?
I mean, I think it's going to be Robbie Anderson. I mean, he's just such a talented wide receiver, and the reality is that, you know, we haven't seen them stop top guys yet. I mean, Terry McLaurin, you know, now Kenny Golladay, and so now they get Robbie Anderson, all have put up good games. It's not like they're putting up DeAndre Hopkins-type numbers, but they're putting up good games. And that is, I think, what the concern becomes for this game, is that, you know, can they contain Robbie Anderson enough to stop what you said is an efficient and surprisingly productive Panthers offense?
So what do you see it going down as? I think I like the idea of a shootout. I've got the Cardinals in a 31-26 win this week.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a high-scoring affair. I've got it going 34-30 Cardinals win.
Perfect. And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up C-Red Podcast, episode 280. We'll be back next week, hopefully talking about a Cardinals win, because we don't like the idea of them falling to 2-2 and then suddenly having to reshape our expectations for the weeks to come. On behalf of the Rise Up C-Red Podcast, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. We'll be back again next week. Go Cardinals! And don't forget to subscribe and everything to this lovely show.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up C-Red Podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.